and Nystrom. Nystrom's really getting some good right hands in.
Gillies is down with Sandstrom. Somebody better help Sandstrom.
Everyone must be held accountable for their actions.
You cannot see your star carried out in a stretcher and do nothing about it.
Oh, my. Did Mick plant one on C-card? Wow.
You can't put a bounty on a man's head.
I just did.
Yeah, that's exactly what we should do. Run him up and fill him in.
Then why don't you?
The kids don't want it. They don't skate. They don't score. They don't hit. They don't fight. They float.
They don't love to win.
They don't hate to lose.
Spinning. Who's he going to go after? The puck drops and Bob Gardner goes right to King Flattenburg.
But just a minute, Al Arbor has won four Stanley Cups, so don't start telling Al Arbor what to do, you and John Davison.
Take care of Mason Tucker. Here's Lance Carlson.
This is Coliseum Chronicles, The Penalty Box, your source for Islanders Enforcer talk. Proud member of the Hockey Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Joe Lazzito. Welcome to episode 152. This is a new series I'm going to have a go with here. I'm calling it Damage Incorporated, and this is volume one. And in this episode today, we're going to look back at the Eric Bolton and Matt Karkner seasons with the Islanders. But before we get to that, if you're on social media, whether it's X, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, click on the show notes below. Well, click on the link. You know, 152 episodes in, and I still can't get this right. It's like, I mean, it's amateur hour here. What are we doing here? Click on the links to those platforms in the show notes, and you'll be instantly connected with me. Also, if you're interested in having an art project done, and you're wondering, well, who is the best, I mean, the absolute best out there, look no further than Mighty Joe Maricich, the graphics joker himself. He's the artist that created the logo for this program, and if you're interested in hiring Joe for an art project, please go on Twitter, at Graphics Joker, or you can reach Joe via loudegg.com. As I mentioned, I'm a proud member of the Hockey Podcast Network. Every team has at least one podcast dedicated to it. I am on the original content side, along with some renowned gentlemen, folks like Terry Ryan, folks like Rod Peterson, and of course, my pal Darren in Saskatchewan, the fourth line voice. Now, Darren released an episode today, number 372, and I took these notes before he posted the graphic for it, so I don't know what he's entitled it. I'm entitling it Drunk Darren, and the reason why is I think he was 10 or 12 beers deep at the start of the episode, and it was actually pretty funny. I mean, you know, when your buddies are drunk and you know, they start talking and maybe try to be a little serious, that's when it gets really funny. But some of the topics he talked about today was Ryan Reeves. I guess he had a fight last night with somebody on Montreal, not Wi-Fi. I don't know who it was. So people are all, I mean, Ryan Reeves can burp wrong and the fight fans will be pissed at him for not burping tough enough or picking his spots where he burped. Darren went on about that a little bit, which I thought was hysterical. Also, his weekly Matt Rempe discussion, which is now it's in his podcast now. There's a little part about Matt Rempe every week, and he's right. I don't understand what the issue is that people, fight fans, have with Matt Rempe. I'm an Islanders fan, and I love this kid on the Rangers, but people are. And this is like my friends will say things like, well, he doesn't win a fight, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. And, well, those are Islanders fans, so I kind of expect it. But when you go in these message boards, the fight message boards and the Facebook groups and stuff like that, which I guess there really aren't fight message boards anymore, this kid's getting criticized. And I don't understand it. He actually, you know, people could say all they want about how fighting's back, fighting's this, fighting's that. Well, it was kind of a, you know, I don't want to say dormant because it wasn't dormant, but there was no spark really this year in terms of fighting. And this kid Rempe comes along and he just injects all this fire into it. And I don't understand how anyone that loves fighting and loves hockey fighting could shit on this kid. But listen to Darren's episode. He'll tell you why. And now also, the unfortunate thing about Darren's episode is that I think he started to sober up around arguably one of the, well, most interesting lists he's ever done. And it's the top 100 toughest NHL players of all time. Spoiler alert. I will, and this is a lesson for all the kids out there. If you're compiling a list of the toughest NHL players out there, don't put Ulf Samuelsson on that. How Ulf Samuelsson gets on some of these lists, I don't know. I mean, I think I know. I think the people making the lists are idiots, and they just look at penalty minutes, so they just equate that with, I don't know. But please, if you're going to make a list of toughest players, NHL players, hockey players, and I understand you could say, well, he's tough in a different aspect or a different respect. And fuck Ulf Samuelsson. Do not put him on any list involving tough NHL players. And I think Ulf Samuelsson's ranking was very high compared to someone like Chris Simon, who I think was ranked behind Ken Linsman also. So that's sort of your little teaser to tune into the episode and give it a listen. But you should be listening anyway to the episode. And the other thing is, Darren is trying to keep me out of Saskatchewan, and I don't understand why. I had a great time the last time I was in Saskatchewan, and I'm hoping to get there in the fall of this year to catch some Western League games and SJ games. For some reason, Darren does not want me there, and it kind of hurts my feelings a little bit. I'll try to get over it. I mean, I'll power through, but I thought we were pals. But he did say if I don't come to Saskatchewan, he will send me some ketchup chips and all dressed. So if I don't have to wait to prove that I'm not coming to Saskatchewan, then I'll say right now, I am not going to Saskatchewan. And I don't have my fingers crossed, my toes crossed, whatever it is that you can cross. Absolutely, please send me those fine Canadian snacks and I will do my best not to come to Saskatchewan. But all kidding aside, you know Fourth Line Voice, talk about him every episode. Definitely listen to his episodes and his back catalogs and also his YouTube channel. Listen, we've all watched hockey fights on YouTube. YouTubes. 152 episodes, folks. 152. We've all watched hockey fights on YouTube. And chances are, it was on the Fourth Line Voice YouTube channel. So check that out. So I want to thank everybody for their feedback on the Mike Wolkin episode. And I want to thank Mike himself because Mike really plugged the shit out of this episode. And the really cool thing was a lot of his clients, a lot of the people that he's represented over the years, I saw they reposted it on social media. Nick Greeno, for one, he was posting it every day, and I appreciate that. And, you know, it was a lot of fun to do. And Mike, ton of great stories, and I hope that this is not, well, it might be the last time for the show unless he, if he has more good stories, I'll definitely have him back. But I do hope to catch up with Mike next time I am up in the 716, as the kids say. But thank you very much for everyone for the feedback. Also, before we get to the episode here, I want to congratulate former guest of the show, former client of Mike Wolkin, that Stone Cold Steve McLaren, who is being inducted into the North Bay Sports Hall of Fame. Bob Murray, he covers the OHL. He's on Facebook, and I guess he copied a press release and he posted this, which is good because I didn't see it anywhere. So just I'll read this to you, and you'll hear all about this. Tough guy Steve McLaren set to be inducted into North Bay Hall of Fame. Former North Bay Battalion and NHL draft pick Steve McLaren will be recognized on April 27th as he's inducted into the North Bay Sports Hall of Fame. I just clicked on something and I lost half my screen. There we go. Interest was shown in McLaren by NCAA Division I schools, but due to a tragic family crisis, that opportunity was put on hold. McLaren possessed grit, determination, toughness, and an outstanding work ethic. While McLaren was never going to lead his team in scoring, his contribution to the teams he played on went far beyond statistics. His greatest contribution was that he fulfilled a role on any team he was part of that allowed the players with specific offensive skills to display their wares without fear of retribution. Steve was an enforcer, and he was good at it. He never went looking for a fight, but never backed down from a confrontation, according to the North Bay Sports Hall of Fame. McLaren played for 2 years for the North Bay Centennials and was a key player on their championship season. In their championship season, I got to go back to school here. He was never drafted in the OHL draft, but rather was a walk-on to the training camp. And coach Bert Templeton was quick to see his hard work and skill at what he did best. Renowned tough guy Dennis Bonvie was part of that team, and Steve got into it with him during training camp. The fight was one thing, but more importantly, it showed his determination, which coach Templeton was quick to see. Steve was drafted in drafted 85th overall by the Chicago Blackhawks in 1994. While his career in the NHL was limited to 6 games, his professional career consisted of 509 games where he scored 17 goals, had 23 assists, and amassed 1,909 penalty minutes. While the NHL is the ultimate level of hockey, the AHL and IHL display a high level of talent in various categories. Steve sustained a career of 12 seasons of professional hockey, maximizing his strengths and playing a vital role in contributing to his team's success. We welcome McLaren as an inductee into the North Bay Sports Hall of Fame. And then, it, you know, bottom of the press release is how you go and get tickets for that if you're in North Bay. But congratulations to Stone Cold and all that stuff they talked about. If you want to know the ins and outs of that, go back and listen to the episode that I did. Three-parter with Stone Cold Steve McLaren. So that brings us to today's episode, and I'm calling it Damage Incorporated. Now, if you're a fan of good music, you know that Damage Incorporated was a song by Metallica, and I like that song, and I like the title. So I was going with, I was trying to think of a title, and I actually say it at the end of this episode, but because I didn't know really what to say, like automatically it's dynamic duos or tag teams, this and that, and that's all been done before. So I tried to be somewhat original. Well, I guess I tried to be somewhat original by using the name of a song that someone had already recorded, but you know what I mean. So we're calling this series Damage Incorporated. So this will be a series where I hopefully will highlight throughout the years of the Islanders two guys who played on the team at the same time. Now, it can be guys that played together for 5 years, 10 years, 1 year, anything like that, as long as it fits the mold. And hopefully, I will have interviewed both of those players. I think in certain cases, that's not going to be possible. But luckily, and I think part of the reason why I started with Eric Bolton and Matt Karkner was because I was fortunate enough to interview both of the boys here. So I think that's why it was easy to do this. So, and then I started thinking, well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch the fights and I'll give you a breakdown, this and that. And then I said, no, why would I do that? I'm going to use the recordings of both of the guys here. So why would you want to hear it from me when you can hear it straight from the horse's mouths? So what I'm going to do is just give you a little bit of a backstory, a little bit of a breakdown, and then I'm going to play the parts of the interviews that both of the guys did, and also a quick clip from Mike Wolkin, stuff you may have missed, stuff maybe you've heard already, but you're going to hear again. Just right from the guys' mouths, the stories of their time with the Islanders. So I hope that you people enjoy that. So really, when you want to talk about Eric Bolton and Matt Karkner with the Islanders, you really have to go back to 2010 or 2011. That was the year the Islanders were loaded for bear. I've said it a million times. That's the year of Zen and Konopka, Trevor Gillies, Matt Martin, Michael Haley, Travis Hamonic lent a hand in the physical department every now and then too. So that was a very tough team. That year was, you know, a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. But when you get to 20, I almost said 21-12. When you get to 2011-12, a lot of changes happened. Zenon Konopka was gone, and I have to interview Z because I got to find out exactly what happened. This guy was the leader of that team. He didn't wear the C that year, but may as well have. I got to find out what happened there, but may as well have worn the C that year. Ultimate leader there, and him and Gillies together were just a nightmare for everybody else. So Z was gone. Trevor Gillies only played three games. He played all three of his games in October, and then he spent rest of the season in Bridgeport. Michael Haley only played 14 games that year, and like Gillies, spent most of that season in Bridgeport as well. So now the heavy lifting really fell onto Matt Martin, and Martin did a great job. But remember, this is only his second full season in the league, and to ask a second-year player to do the heavy lifting. Now, we're not putting Martin back in 1985 or 1995, but back then, there were still a lot of tough guys in this league, and to have this fall on Matt Martin, that's a pretty big ask, especially in his second year. But, you know, we all love Matt Martin. We all know that he's as tough as they come, and he did a really great job. But again, especially coming from where he was the year before, where he had Konopka, he had Trevor Gillies, he had Michael Haley, to now where you're the main guy, that might have been a pretty quick transition. And I'm not saying he wasn't ready for it, but maybe Garth realized, hey, you know what, maybe it's we got to get him some help here. So really on the first day of free agency the following year, Garth addressed the need for more muscle. Pretty much as soon as free agency started, Matt Karkner was signed. And shortly thereafter, Eric Bolton was signed. Now, what do you have in Matt Karkner and Eric Bolton? These are established heavyweights. These are guys with a resume that and a fight card that you could put up against anybody. But also, what do you get with these guys? You get a veteran presence and you get leadership. And really, you go from, I kind of look at the 2010-11 team almost as like a biker gang. You know, you got the, think of the Harleys, and you think of Konopka and Trevor Gillies and Martin and Haley riding in. And now you kind of think, well, now Martin's by himself, so we're going to bring in some older guys, established guys, and now Martin's not by himself. And really, at that point, I don't know if you could have brought in two better guys than Karkner and Bolton anyway. But before that even gets started, on September 15th, 2012, well, the owners decided to lock the players out. And the lockout lasted 113 days. The league lost 628 games. And when the lockout finally ended, it was January 6, 2013, and the season was reduced to 48 games. So once the season got started, Eric Bolton, Matt Karkner, they had four fights in the shortened season, ranking both of them second behind Matt Martin, who led the team with seven. Matt Karkner was second on the team in penalty minutes with 46, and Eric Bolton was fourth on the team with 36. So I guess if I was smart, I would have told you he was third. But if you really want to know, go to HockeyDB. Now, the thing to note about their eight fights that year, only one of those fights, and I think, again, this is where leadership comes in, because obviously there's always, the situation has to fall into place. There has to be a reason there for or whatever. But out of the eight fights, seven of them were on the road. We start on January 25th. Matt Carkner's first fight with the Islanders was against Milan Lucic in Boston. I guess this was back when, I was going to take a cheap shot at Milan for, you know, saying when he only fought men, but that would be a little below the belt, and we're going to stick to the Matt Carkner, Eric Bolton stuff here. January 31st, Eric Bolton fought Chris Bartsch. Not to be outdone, on February 3rd, Chris Bartsch fought the other big boy, Matt Carkner. Valentine's Day, no love between Eric Bolton and former Islander Aaron Asham. They fought in New Jersey. On March 16th, 2013, Eric Bolton fought George Parros. On April 18th, both boys fought. Eric Bolton fought Colt Knorr, and Matt Carkner fought Fraser McLaren. And then finally, on April 26th, 2013, Matt Carkner finished his fight card, his fight season that year, with one of the few guys actually bigger than him, I think, and that's John Scott. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets, only on DraftKings Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. So as we roll into 2013-14, Matt Martin once again led the team in fights with 10. Carkner ranked second in fights with 9, and Bolton ranked third with 8. So that's not a bad 1-2-3 punch. It's actually more of a Bermuda Triangle, I guess. Carkner led the team in penalty minutes with 149, and Bolton ranked third with 88. I'm going to say that Matt Martin was second, but again, I wasn't smart enough to make a note of that. But I feel pretty safe in saying that Matt Martin was second between Karks and Bolts there. So the season fight card started on September 22nd in Nashville. Matt Hendricks decided he wanted to try his hand with Matt Carkner. That was the only preseason fight that either one of these guys had. And then we get started on October 15th. Eric Bolton at home fights Cody McCormick, then of Buffalo. On October 26th, 2013, again at the Nassau Coliseum, Jay Rosehill tries his hand with Eric Bolton. On November 14th, Jordan Nolan, one of the gyms from Shorzy, decides he wants to fight Matt Carkner. And on November 19th, 2013, we had Eric Bolton and Colt Knorr and Matt Carkner and Fraser McLaren once again. December 5th, Matt Carkner and Chris Stewart. December 14th, Eric Bolton against George Parros. December 28th, Matt Carkner against Ryan Clough. January 18th of 2014, Jay Rosehill and Eric Bolton. And on January, that was round two that year. And then 2 days later, Jay Rosehill decided he wanted to try his hands with Matt Carkner. So very busy year for Jay Rosehill against the Islanders. February 27th, you had Eric Bolton against Tim Gleason. March 2nd, Eric Bolton against Chris Bartsch. This time he's with Florida. Gleason, by the way, was with Toronto. On March 4th, Eric Bolton against Mark Stewart of Winnipeg. And then we finished the year with 4 Matt Carkner bouts, the rematch with John Scott on March 15th. A 2-fight game for Matt Carkner against Eric Gabranson and Chris Bartsch. Now with Florida. I don't know if I mentioned that before. And then the final fight of the year was against Jared Bohl. I remember, I don't know what Matt Calvert was thinking. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know if he was trying to fight Matt Carkner, but Carkner kind of took it easy on him. They didn't get fighting majors, but then Jared Bohl did what a good teammate would do, and he stepped up for Matt Calvert, but that was actually... kind of funny there. So that's their those are their fights. And like I said, you know, guys, listen, I would be giving you a little more detail on this stuff, but why would you want to hear that from me when you can hear it from them, which you're going to hear from them in a few minutes? But I just figured I'd run it down for you. And I think, you know, in the future for these Damage Incorporated episodes, if I don't have sound from the guys themselves, then I'll give you a little more detail. So as we move into 2014-15, the league has really started to get soft and unwatchable. Matt Karkner did not appear in a game for the Islanders this year, spending the season in Bridgeport. And Eric Bolton appeared in only 10 games. He had 2 fights and 30 penalty minutes. And those 2 games were in April. First, in Philly, he fought Ryan White. And then April 11th, he fought Dalton Prout back at the Coliseum. Really, it's kind of, this is where it's, I think, just weak and unwatchable. The Ken Campbell dream, Damian Cox dream, hockey here without the alpha males, I guess. But it gets even worse because in 2015-16, again, Matt Karkner did not play any games for the Islanders. He appeared in 41 games for Bridgeport in what would be his final season as a player before he made the transition into coaching. And in 2015-16, Eric Bolton played 6 games for the Islanders, no fights, and registering 2 penalty minutes. But the highlight of that year for Eric Bolton, and we talk about it, so stand by if you haven't heard it before, the preseason, he basically chased Tom Wilson around trying to exact revenge for Wilson's cheap hit on Lubomir Vyshnovsky during the 2014-15 playoffs. And now again, I'll say it like I've said it a million times. Tom Wilson is not afraid of anybody. I'm sure there are certain guys he'd rather fight than others. I'm not saying Tom Wilson is a pussy. I'm not saying Tom Wilson is a punk. I'm just stating a fact. Eric Bolton wanted Tom Wilson in the 2015 preseason, and Tom Wilson wanted no part of him. He did everything in his power to avoid him. And we talk about that, so stay tuned for that. Like I said, Bolton would play 2 games in Bridgeport that year before he retired as well. So just to put a bow on this part of the episode, Matt Karkner finished his Islanders tenure playing 75 games, 5 assists, 5 points, 195 penalty minutes, and 13 fights. And his 13 fights rank him tied for 28th on the all-time franchise list with, if I asked you to guess who the 2 guys he's tied with, I know you'd get this right away. Dave Lewis and Billy Smith, who, by the way, getting back to Darren's toughest 100 players, I'm pretty sure Billy Smith ranked higher than Tony Twist. But again, I don't want to give the whole thing away, but I just hit me now when I said Billy's name. But yeah, so Karkner, 5 points, 195 PIM, 75 games, 13 fights, and 28th all-time on the Islander franchise list for fighting. Eric Bolton finishes Islanders career playing 54 games, 4 goals, 2 assists. He's always been more of a goal scorer. The guy got the hat trick in Atlanta, 4 goals, 2. Definitely more of a sniper than a playmaker. 156 penalty minutes and 14 fights. Now, his 14 fights rank him tied for 27th. On the all-time franchise list with some pretty notable names here. Bobby Bassin, Brad Delgarno, Trevor Gillies, and the man, in my opinion, who's the greatest player to ever play for the franchise and the most important player that has ever played for the franchise, and that's Dennis Podvin. So that's the rundown, the numbers that the guys put up during their tenure with the Islanders. And it was really, when you think about it, it was a fun time for me as a fan having both of those guys here. I love the veteran presence. I love the leadership, as I said earlier. And, you know, both guys come with the resume second to none. And I don't know if either one of them are listening, but it was really fun having you guys here. The thing I say all the time about players like that is I love turning around the hockey card and seeing Islanders listed as one of the teams that guys like this played on. So I, for one, and I know most Islander fans, really appreciate the effort, that Matt Karkner and Eric Bolton put in and protecting the players. And not an easy job to do at any age, but, and I'm not even making fun of the guys here. I mean, obviously this was both of their last stops. They were both older. Well, it was the oldest part of their career. And it's not an easy job, as I said, and it gets harder and harder every year. The body can only take so much. And really, I just want to thank the boys for what they did. So with that, you've heard enough of me. Stand by and you can hear the real meat and potatoes of this episode. I guess the only question is, who's meat and who's potatoes? Before we get to the boys here, the first soundbite we're going to hear is from Bolton's agent, Mike Wolkin. Now, Mike was the guest on my last episode, 151, and if you listen to that episode, then this will just be a refresher for you. And if you didn't listen to the episode, then this is a bit of what you missed. Now, this is Mike describing how Bolt signing with the Islanders went down.
So now Bolt has played in the NHL for for how long? And he ends up signing a two-year deal in New Jersey, and it was probably personally for him, it was the worst, you know, statistically, it was the year the Devils went to the Cup the last time when they lost to LA, but it didn't work great for Bolts, you know, and the coach wasn't, DeBoer wasn't a big fan of Bolts, and, you know, and that happens every once in a while. So they ended up buying him out. It was like June 29th. And I was like, Bolts calls me and he goes, I just got off the phone with Lou. They're buying. And now Bolts had been signing one-year deals for like the last 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I get him a two-year deal in New Jersey when it's 35 and over. Mm-hmm. And I was like, talk about Houdini. And I was like, wow, that was, you know, we fooled somebody again and got a two-year deal. And so he ends up getting bought out June 29th. He calls me, and I still remember I was at my daughter's soccer game in Niagara Falls. I had shitty reception. And we're sitting there, and I was like, oh, all right, well, you know, I don't know. We'll make some phone calls. I don't know if it's going to be tough to get another deal. You know, you're 36 years old, didn't have a great whatever.
Yeah.
I said, but I'll make a few phone calls. And literally make a phone call to Snowy from Niagara Falls. And I'm like, Snowy, Bolts just got bought out in New Jersey. He wants to stay in the division and stick it up their ass. And Snowy's like, all right, we'll sign him July 1st. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
And I was like, because, you know, now Bolts is getting bought out, so he's making like 750, so he's getting 2/3 of the 750, so he's getting 500 there, and then he's going to sign with the Islanders, you know, the league minimum was, I think, 575 at the time. And so Snowy calls me July 1. It was like, so now it's like 12 o'clock, and then it's 12:05, and Bolts is calling me. Have you heard from Snowy yet? I was like, Bolts, I don't think you're number one. He told us you're signing. He told us you're signing. I was like, all right. So, you know, 1 o'clock rolls around. All of a sudden, there's reports that Matt Karkner signs a 3-year deal in Long Island. And I'm like, oh, shit. I wonder if, you know. And then now I'm getting a little bit worried.
Right.
Like, just a little bit worried because, you know, Karkner's pretty tough. And, yeah. And 10 minutes later, Snowy calls and is like, all right, let's get the Bolts done. 1 year at 550 or 575 or something. He's getting bought out, so he's going to be making $1 million this year. And I'm like, all right, let me make sure that he's good with this. I'm good with it. And I call Bolts, and I'm like, all right, Bolts. Snowy called. It's all set. We're going to sign there. And Bolts says, hey, do you think we should shop this around? And I was like, Bolts, are you freaking nuts? I'm like, if I could go through that little cell phone, I would have. I was like, and he says to this day, he was only joking around. He wasn't joking around. But the way I reacted, he tried to make it where I was, that he was joking around. But still to this day, he still talks about, oh, yeah, I was only joking. No way.
Well, he told me that story, and I thought that was classic. So I'm like, I definitely have to ask you about that one.
And he probably told it just like that, right?
He did, but I got to tell you, I don't think he told me he was joking. He did tell me about your reaction, but I don't think he told me he was joking. He didn't say he was serious, but he didn't say, oh, I was just kidding.
Oh, I think he was 100% serious.
I'm sure.
And that's, but then when I yelled at him, he tried to reverse it.
Next up, we're going to hear from Eric Bolton himself. Now, Bolts was my guest way back for episode number 23. And if you listen to that episode, it's probably been a while since you've heard it. So this is a little refresher of Eric's time with the Islanders.
And after your 1 year in New Jersey, you end up signing with the Islanders. So who did your agent know that talked with the Islanders to get you over here?
He called Gar Snow the next day, and Snowy said, I'll sign him right now. So I thought I was done. After getting, being at my age and getting bought out, I thought I was done. And then Snowy took a chance on me, which I'm will always be grateful for. And the rest is history. I kind of made the Long Island home.
Yeah. Well, that first season, 15 games, 36 penalty minutes. Even though you only played 15 games, you're still fourth on the team in penalty minutes. So 2012-13 was a far cry from some.
That was a lockout year, though.
I know, but still, you're still fourth on the team.
15 games, that's good for me for a lockout year.
Oh, no, I'm not even talking about the games. I'm talking about the fact that with only 36 minutes, you were still fourth on the team, and just how the game had changed from when you first started, where you could get 36 minutes in a game, and now you're getting it in 15 games. But you played 15 games, you had four fights. Chris Bartsch, all four fights were pretty good showings. Chris Bartsch of New Jersey, you fought Asham. Again, he's wearing the bad guy colors now with the Rangers. George Parros at Florida. Obviously, we'll talk about the Montreal fight, but he was in Florida at the time. And another good scrap with Colton Orr. So you made all your fights count that year, that's for sure.
Yeah, I did. Well, the Bartsch one was, they signed him after they bought me out, so I was coming after him for sure.
Okay.
So that was kind of like a, trying to make a statement there. Mm-hmm. I ran into Big George down in Florida, ended up doing pretty well against him. I think he might have hurt his shoulder in that fight. I think he went down awkwardly there, but he was a tough guy. And then obviously me and Colton Orr just, besides that first fight we had, everyone was a, punch in the face contest.
Yeah. And Asham, you just wanted to fight him because he's wearing that ugly uniform, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, no, Ash is just the guy that's a gamer.
Oh, no.
And you know what? You don't have to ask him twice, he'll fight you.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. He's crazy. No. But I don't even know how that one started, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember. But now, so that year it was pretty much you and Matt Karkner. Matt Martin was there. Next season, it was you and Karks again. Matt Martin's still there. There were Brett Gallant had signed with the team, and obviously I think he was signed to play in Bridgeport, but he did play a few games with the Islanders. And Justin Johnson, actually, I think everyone will remember him for the John Scott KO.
Yeah.
Even though John Scott, I think, says he only lost one fight in his career, he doesn't count that one. I don't know why, but if I'm not mistaken, I don't know. But that was a good scrap. So you definitely weren't alone that year. And like I say, you and Karkner are always a great tag team. But that was the year that the best fourth line in hockey was assembled with Marty and Clutterbuck and Cizikas. So that was similar. I mean, for someone like yourself, you were on a similar line in Atlanta. What's your opinion on those guys and the job that they do?
I mean, they're the heart and soul of the team. If they're not going, they're not together. The team's not the same. They can start every period. They can finish every period. They can play against the top lines or fourth lines. They just they know their role, they accept it, and they it's really, I mean, the other two, Clutterbuck and Martin, are the big bangers on the wings, but if you watch Casey Cizikas, his motor just doesn't stop, and he really is the heart and soul of the team. He drives the engine. Can't say enough about all three of those guys.
I'm currently doing a project for the show where I want to come up with like the ultimate top 10 for the Islanders, and I figured the easiest way to do that, and probably the more fun way for myself, is I'm going position by position, coming up with a top 10 at position. And while I'm doing my research, what I didn't know, and it's crazy, but Matt Martin actually has the fourth most fighting majors in the history of the team. I didn't know that, and I learned that when I was doing my research. So I, you know, forgot, and Marty's a guy that can play. I mean, he can play, take a regular shift, but if you think about the history of the Islanders, he actually has the fourth most fighting majors with the organization.
Yeah, Marty's been there a long time.
Yeah,
he's been there a long time. He does his job. He can play a regular shift. He can chip in. He's very responsible defensively. The word for all three of those guys is, you know, they're reliable, right? So you know what you're going to get from every shift in, shift out.
That season, you had two pretty good fights with Jay Rosehill, who was with the Flyers at the time. Do you remember those fights?
Yeah, I do. Ended up doing really well in the first one. And he kind of was looking for the second one. And it was a toe-to-toe fight. Ended up slipping at the end, falling down, and kind of bugged me a little bit because he pumped his hands up like he beat me up or something, but it's all good. But he's another guy that was a tricky guy. Threw both hands. He's a gamer too.
So this season was the season where you had the rematch with George Parros that worked out very well in your favor. Probably, I guess, the signature fight you had with the Islanders. You remember the whole sequence of events in the fight with George in the rematch?
Yeah, I do. I wasn't getting in the lineup much at that point. I was getting pretty old. So any chance I got in, I had to do something, right? So I asked George, and he obliged. And it was a good fight. You know, he's a big, big, long guy, so you have to, you know, weather the storm early. And he lost his grip and kind of turned his head, and I got a good right hand in on him and knocked him down. So It was a good fight, but didn't want to make sure I hurt him. But hats off to him. He had a great career too, and what a tough guy he was.
So when you think back to early parts of your career playing in some of those East Coast League arenas, and you're working with the NHL, do you ever think you find yourself playing on the ice at Yankee Stadium? Now, you didn't play in the game, but you practiced on it. What was that experience like? Because obviously it's the biggest place you've ever played in. When you're skating on the ice and you look up and you're in Yankee Stadium, what's that like?
Well, I did pregame warm-up out there. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
We actually got scratched. Me and Cartner got scratched last minute, actually. Mm-hmm. There was a particular player that they were trying to trade, so they wanted to play him. And I kind of took it on the chin. I wasn't happy about that. But me and Matt Carpenter were in the hot tub watching the game in the Yankees locker room. So
not bad.
Yeah, that was our night.
Yeah. I mean, well, I didn't know. I wasn't sure if – I knew you didn't play, but I wasn't sure if you'd taken the warm-up. But I'm assuming for that game, you know, a lot of times playing games and warm-ups, maybe you get a few thousand people watching the warm-ups. But I'm assuming for that game, the stadium had to have a pretty good crowd for the warm-up because it's just such a new experience for so many people. So you're taking the warm-up and you're looking around at Yankee Stadium. That had to, it had to be pretty intense, I would think.
I mean, yeah, it was obviously those outdoor games. Yankee Stadium was the next level. So I kind of knew I was getting scratched that game, so I wasn't too gung-ho about it. But, you know, looking around, the size, the fans, it was a great, great experience. Nonetheless, a great atmosphere.
So now we get to the part of the interview that I really want. I mean, obviously I wanted to ask you about all this stuff, but there's definitely something I wanted to ask you about. In the playoffs that season, there was an incident with Washington where Tom Wilson basically cheap shotted Lubomir Vasnovsky, ran him headfirst into the boards, ended his career. You weren't playing in the playoffs. So next season comes around, and in an exhibition game, you basically chased Tom Wilson around, and he wanted no part of you. So I had respect for Tom Wilson before that. And if he would have fought you, not that I respect him for what he did to Lubo, but at least if he would have fought you and answered the bell, I could respect him a little more. For myself, I don't respect him at all. And I'm not saying fighting you is a great thing to do either, because obviously I don't want to fight you, but it's part of the gig. And if you're going to end someone's career when it's time to answer the bell, you have to answer the bell. And, you know, he didn't want to fight you. I think Scotty Mayfield went after him. He declined that too. And after the game, one of the things he said is, I just don't think there's any point in me fighting those guys. Bolton didn't play it all last year. He's probably not going to play it all this year. I'm trying to use these preseason games to get ready for the year. I know there's always going to be that physical part of my game, but there's just no need for me to take that guy unless he's running around and taking advantage of our guys. Now, your quote, I think, was better. You said he kept turning me down. He wasn't interested. He was scared to death. So, if you don't mind, like, take me through. So, you know, that day you're playing Washington, you know you're going to be in the lineup, and you know what he did to Lubo. So, what's your mindset going into that game?
I mean, retribution.
Yeah.
I mean, he had to be held accountable. And I thought for sure after that he would step up and fight. And when he didn't, I was like shocked. And then I actually ran him a couple times. I knocked him over a couple times, and I was going after him the whole game, and he still wouldn't do it. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But you know what? Some of these young kids, they don't get that. They don't get the code. You're better off just to drop your gloves, throw them, you know, hang on, throw me down. At least you did it, right? At least you got it over with. Like, but yeah, I mean, everyone loved Lubo, great guy. To see him get injured like that, and to see him taking liberties and not answering the bell was definitely got heated, and we definitely were ticked off at Wilson. And you know, I had to do my job. I wanted to go out and settle the score, and it's unfortunate he wouldn't do it, but I wanted to let him know, and it is what it is.
Well,
some guys will stand up, and some guys won't.
Well, as an Islander fan and a fan of the role, you know, I could tell you that I know we all appreciated you trying to go in and you know, basically defend Lubo's honor and just be a great teammate. I think the other part of the equation that annoys me about Wilson is he didn't want to fight you, he didn't want to fight Mayfield, but he had no problem fighting Anders Lee. And I love Anders Lee. I mean, he's the captain, and he's hard-nosed, he's gritty, and he, you know, I think in today's NHL, he ends up fighting just as much as anybody on the team, I think, except for Ross. But when you wanted to fight, he couldn't be bothered. He couldn't do it. I mean, like, say, I think, you know, scared to death. He didn't want to fight Scotty either. But Anders comes calling, and he has no problem dropping gloves. And that completes the equation for me, how the whole thing is just an irritant, because it's not that he didn't want to fight. He didn't, you know, didn't want to be held accountable. He just didn't want to be held accountable to a guy that, you know, might take him to task. You know, it's easier to fight an Anders Lee than an Eric Bolton. And, I mean, everybody knows that, but, you know, like I say, it's not like guys that when you were coming up, you knew you'd have to answer the bell at certain points. And you didn't pick or choose who you fought. You know, you couldn't go, well, I'm not going to fight the heavyweight, I'm going to fight the fifth toughest guy on the team. And like you say, I think a lot of the younger guys, they don't get it. And I think that's part of the reason why I don't respect him at all. And it's part of the reason why I love Ross Johnston to death. I think he, you know, in a new school game, I think he played old school style.
Yeah, Ross definitely does. Ross gets it.
Yeah.
He's another Maritimer that, you know, an interesting road to the NHL. And he, I mean, I played with him at Bridgeport my last year. I wasn't really playing down there, but I was kind of like helping the kids out. I'd wrestle him after practice. And I've never met, besides LaRocque, I've never wrestled a stronger guy than him. He is a freak of nature, how strong he is.
Yeah.
And he'll be the toughest guy in the league for years to come, for sure. The guy's an absolute monster.
And just to, you know, speak a bit on that, so, you know, everybody knows it's not like it used to be. There's only a handful of guys in the league that can kind of even make that claim. I think the guy that everyone kind of agrees on right now that's the top dog is Ryan Reeves. And what did Ross Johnston do the first – I mean, first time they played this past season in, at the Coliseum, Johnston's challenging him, and Reeves, yep, just like, who are you, whatever. And then right away in the game in Vegas, they square off and they go. I mean, for someone like myself, I hope Ross plays here 10 years. Like, I love that kid. I'm so pumped that he's here. But I'm also pumped that he actually gets it. Well, I think Ross gets it. I think Reeves gets it. I don't think a guy like Wilson gets it. And I just, you know, I feel so fortunate. Islanders always seem to come through with keeping a tough guy or two on the roster. And, you know, like, my biggest fear right now is that Ross gets picked up by Seattle. I hope that doesn't happen, but that's what I'm afraid of. But I'm usually wrong, so hopefully I'm wrong on this one too.
Well, Ross has had some good mentors too. He's had Karkner in Bridgeport. He's had Brent Thompson in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
He's had me. He's had Eric Aarons' player development.
Yeah.
And, you know what? If he doesn't do that, he's not going to play in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy's a good hockey player.
Yeah.
He actually has good hands. He's responsible. He's good defensively. He actually can play the game.
Yeah.
But what separates him from the next guy is how tough he is and how intimidating he is. And so once he realized, okay, I got to do this once in a while, I got to be that guy, he can contribute in all areas of the game. He can put the odd goal in. He's got he's great coming out of his zone, getting pucks off the wall and making plays. And I'll tell you what, the guy can play hockey. He's just a big boy that can fight too.
So how did the next season, where he ended up playing six games, I mean, at the beginning of the season, did you end up talking with the coaches or whatever, and did they basically tell you, look, you're not going to play that much? But, you know, listen, I think it really speaks a lot to your character and the player that you are, you know, not just on the ice, but off the ice and in the room, that you stayed on and you didn't play a lot of games, but every year you were here. And like I said, I think that's a credit to the your character. But did they basically talk to you before every season where you weren't going to play that much and basically let you know that?
I mean, yeah, at that point, I mean, I'm pushing 40 at that point, so yeah. I would go in the office and talk to Gar Snow one-on-one and be like, okay, what's the deal? I'll do whatever it takes to stay in the NHL and stay on this team. I want to help any way I can.
Yeah.
So whether I play two games or, you know, 50 games, I'm going to be ready every time you put me in. And I think he knew that. Because there was a lot of seasons in my career where I did get scratched, but I always stayed ready.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of guys that can take 20 games off and throw you back in and do your job. So I was pretty good at that. So, and obviously just being the ultimate teammate and being a character guy and keeping guys loose. And when you do get in there, do your job. And he really didn't have a reason not to sign me.
Yeah.
You know, I was an easy extra guy to have around. If he needed toughness, he'd throw me in. If he didn't, I was happy just, you know, not happy being scratched, but, you know, I accepted it and I didn't make any waves.
Now, of course, that season, like I said, you play six games, you have two penalty minutes. And, of course, you got two penalty minutes going after Wilson again, right?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. And, again, he didn't want any part of it. So I guess it's just fitting that the final two penalty minutes of your regular season penalty minutes of your career were against Tom Wilson. I think that's comical because he still didn't want any part of you. Like you said, you're pushing 40. I mean, I've seen Tom Wilson. He's a big dude. He's in great shape, but still, he doesn't want to take on the old grizzled veteran.
Yeah, what better time to fight when I'm 40 years old?
Yeah, but so the next season comes, and I guess your last fight in an Islanders uniform, fittingly for someone that played the role for so long, you were coming to the defense of a teammate in an exhibition game against the Rangers when you had a fight with Tanner Glass. Do you remember that?
I do remember. Yeah. I do remember that, yeah. He got the early punching on me. He broke my, I think he broke my cheekbone, an early punch. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know it was broken until like 2 weeks later, but yeah, I remember that fight. Yeah. So, Tanner was another guy that we all hated. We wanted to always go after him.
Well, I think that was your last fight, correct? You didn't have, like, say you got hurt in a fight, and then how does it work out after the exhibition games that year where you end up in Bridgeport? You played two games down there, one assist, by the way, so you scored in half your games. So how does that end up? How does it end up where you're down there? You know, what's that discussion?
Well, going into the negotiations, if there's any negotiations at this point,
yeah.
Not really. But I mean, and Snowy kind of known. He's like, listen, I'll sign you to two-way. You're going to be in Bridgeport. You'll go down there. You'll practice with the team. You can. You're not going to play much. You're going to come back and forth. I want you to be with your family. Go back. I mean, that's the type of guy Snowy was. He took care of me.
Yeah.
Another loyal guy that you know I can't say enough about. And he was just like, go down there and mentor the kids, practice with them, and stay ready. And if we ever need you, we'll call you up. But if not, just kind of like help coach kind of down there. So it was a fun year.
We'll finish up the first round of Damage Incorporated hearing from Matt Karkner. Matt Karkner was the guest back in episode 65, and that was a two-part episode. And this was Matt's time with the Islanders, right from the man himself. How hard was it to sign with the Islanders? How hard was it to leave Ottawa?
It was difficult, you know. Obviously, it was my hometown. It was, you know, the best success I've had in the NHL and in my career to that point. And leaving was tough, but I became a free agent, first time in my career where I was actually in a good position as a free agent. I had a family and I wanted to make sure that this contract, it was probably going to be my last contract because of my knee and my body, obviously breaking down a little bit, but, for Ottawa, all I wanted was a 2-year deal. And I would have stayed there, but they just, you know, Brian Murray just didn't want to commit on that and felt that it was time and for me to move on. And we parted ways. Obviously, Garth gave me a call and we reached a deal and I was really happy. And again, it was one of those moments in my career that kind of was a little surreal, you know, to kind of be in that first day of free agency and getting a lot of action, a lot of calls, a lot of interest. So definitely bittersweet leaving Ottawa, but I was excited for a new challenge.
Normally a lockout is a bad thing, but in your case with your knee acting up again, was the lockout actually a blessing in disguise that you had more time to rest it?
Yeah, a little bit. It was still kind of aggravated through the summer. I went in and I saw everyone with the Islanders and we assessed everything. Everything looked good with my knee. It was just taking time to kind of settle down because I was playing through it, right? I was draining my knee and playing through all the pain and all that kind of stuff. So probably just needed a little bit more time to settle down and it did. And I had good treatment there. On the island and they definitely took care of me. Was it ideal to have a lockout? No, but
right.
You know, it was a little bit of a blessing in disguise, I guess, for me personally. But again, no lockout was not fun.
Right. Right. You played with a couple of really young players at the time, a couple of young, hungry Lions. One of them is still with the Islanders, took a couple year hiatus. He's back. Another guy moved out west. What do you remember about a young Matt Martin and a young Travis Hamonic?
Yeah, Marty. I remember him from previous years, just doing his job, doing what he does. He goes out, he plays physical, he finishes his checks. And I remember trying to chase him around when I was in Ottawa to fight. And at that point, he was young and he was like, nah, I'm not doing that. So we had a good chuckle when we saw each other. And, man, he was just – I could just tell that this kid was driven and he was going to go places. And obviously, is a key part of that core with the Isles. Just a good person, phenomenal athlete, off ice, the stuff the guy can do, he's just a freak. So, definitely cool to be able to play alongside Matty.
What about Travis?
He was a good guy, good character. I always got mad at him because, it seemed like he would change a little late, and I was always chasing down a two-on-one. So I started to say, are you trying to, like, get me the green jacket here with the plus-minus? Because it's going downhill. But, no, Travis, good guy, played hard. I know he was, he had some tough times on the island, but he was, he's a hell of a D-man.
Yeah. Another defenseman that you played with, another big defenseman. Do you have any memories of playing with Joe Finley?
Yeah, big Joe Finley. I remember him very well. He was a huge human being. Again, another big guy, just simple D-man. And, he had a short stint with us, but, again, Joe did his job. I think he could have did a little better, but good guy. He could throw him for sure too.
How did you like playing for Cappy?
Cappy was a little bit of a change from Paul McLean before. Cappy's got his little quirks and his little superstitions, which I picked on fairly quickly, but good guy, good kind of player's coach, and really did care about you. Didn't want to beat you down too hard. He tried to keep things positive and light. He was driven. He's a driven coach and wanted to have success. That's when we kind of started getting that playoff success. That's kind of when it started turning in the right direction. Getting the right people involved and all that. So for my few years there, it was not a bad experience.
And this was your first time, I would imagine, associating with Brent Thompson, someone who you'd be associated with for the next several years. What were your impressions of Brent?
Tomer was intense. Yeah, he was intense. He was a passionate coach and he was controlled and everything. I just mean, like, you could sense that he really wanted the best out of us and really demanded it. So for me as a D coach, he was good for me. He was honest, always honest with me, and that carried over later on as well.
A couple of fights you had this season with the Islanders. You had one very prolonged fight with Chris Barch of the Devils. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, kind of. That one was. And again, I had a long hiatus and getting back into fighting. And he just got me tied up pretty well and was trying to tire me out again. I remember that. And I just couldn't get loose in that fight. It was kind of frustrating, to be honest with you. I thought that was more of a wrestling match than really a fight. But he did a good job. He was technical, that's for sure.
And a player with Toronto that you fought this season and the following season, and there's a fantastic picture of you landing a shot right to the kisser of Fraser McLaren. Do you remember fighting Fraser?
Yeah, that was, I think that might have been the second time I fought him. I fought him in San Jose, I think when I was with Ottawa. Big guy. I heard about him and I was kind of, surprised he was up in the NHL, but yeah, he was big. He was tough. He did his job, and he had a real good range on him. So to get in, you had to kind of get inside. And I think I switched on that one too, kind of caught him off guard when we were squaring off. I showed him lefty and then switched to righty real quick. And that's probably the picture you see of me landing that punch. But yeah, tough kid for sure.
And what's it like being the smaller guy in a fight? I would say most of the times in your fights, you were the bigger guy. At worst, maybe it was even. But this season, you fought John Scott. Bigger than you height-wise, I don't think he's as thick as you are. I don't think he's as strong as you are. But when you fight a guy big, taller than you, that has to be pretty weird.
Yeah, no, and I think the first fight we had, I think we fought twice. Maybe it was once that year, once the next, something like that. But The first one we had, he came down and you talk about an elbow. I took his elbow to the chin and I was seeing stars and I got really angry and came up to him and grabbed him and we fought. And that was just having someone that big, and he was strong. He was a pretty strong guy. It was a wrestling match and we didn't really, there wasn't a lot of punches thrown the first fight. But yeah, it's definitely a little different grabbing a guy and not being able to reach or struggling to gain your hold on a guy, for sure. Totally different animal.
So one of the things that I always liked about Garth, and I wish more GMs would do this, Garth always seemed to be a guy that would reward his American League players. You know, if they did a good job down in the minors, he'd always seem to get them up for a game or two, a weekend, whatever it is, almost like, hey, thanks for doing the job down there. Here, you know, we'll give you some NHL games. He did that the following season with two guys, and I wonder if you have any memories of Brett Gallant and Justin Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Their stories coming up for that little stint was it was excellent. And you know, and Gally and JJ was just the most respectful human being on the planet. And you know, was like, oh, it's awesome being up here with you guys. And, you know, is there anything you can, you know, tell me? I'm like, JJ, I'm sure you'll be fine, buddy. anyway, so Gally and JJ, at that point, I think me and Bolts were still playing, but we're like, boys, go have fun. You know, we didn't have to do the fighting for that little stretch. We let them kind of get their feet under them, and boy, did they do a great job. It was one of those things. Gallant is kind of, you don't really expect him to be as tough as he is. He looks pretty pretty kind of lean and lanky, and you wouldn't suspect him to be tough, but I think I'm forgetting his name in Ottawa. Anyways, a tougher guy in Ottawa, they ended up squaring off, and the kid just left himself wide open, and Gally was counter-punching and finally landed one, put him right in his butt. And then, again, the same thing in Buffalo with JJ. They're talking about fighting. Him and John Scott were talking about fighting in the warm-ups, and John was like, nah, I'm not fighting. My coach told me not to fight you. And I'm going to respect my coach and blah, blah, blah. So I didn't really expect it. And then JJ, you know, somehow he convinced Scott to fight. They squared off. And I saw JJ starting to throw these left, you know, hammers, like big lefties. And John didn't see them coming. I'm like, is he going to protect himself? Because he's going to get hit with one of these. And then wham, you know, JJ got him, put John on his butt. John got up and, you know, kind of was laughing about it. And I'm like, Scott, did you not know he was a lefty? He's like, I didn't see them. I'm like, how did you not see those coming? Like, they were coming hard and furious. And so that was a pretty cool experience for those guys. And obviously, yeah, they're warriors, and Gally's still doing it. He's still playing. And you know, JJ, man, that was a cool thing to see and watch.
You remember fighting Ryan Clough, who was with the Devils at the time?
Yeah, me and Chloe knew each other pretty well, and in the minors with Cleveland. And he was coming back from a kind of a concussion issue, and I forget what happened. He ran someone, I grabbed him. I didn't think he was going to fight, but then he dropped the gloves, and you know, he did a pretty good job. And I was like, why are you fighting? Like, why are you fighting me? He was making a lot of money at the time, and he had like bad head issues, and he still does to this day. Mm-hmm. I think he still struggles with them, which stinks.
Yeah.
Cause I think he was a coach with the Growlers in Newfoundland, and he had to kind of take a leave from that because of, you know, head issues and that kind of thing. So terrible to see that happen with guys. And I know it does affect a lot of guys, but Chloe was, he was definitely not scared. That's for sure. Tough kid.
Another tough guy that you know, very good resume. You kind of gave it to him though. You remember fighting Jay Rosehill?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I remember that fight actually. I fought him in the minors, and I think the result was pretty similar. Rosie was pretty pissed off, I think, in this fight, because I did kind of catch him quickly. He was, I think he ran one of our forwards. And I got in there real quick, and I didn't give him a chance, and I just started throwing. Went down pretty good, but he's another kid. He was a character. He got in a little bit of trouble. Was it car theft or something?
I don't remember.
There was a story. I think they got it wasn't really a theft. I think he might have borrowed a car for a joke, something like that. I don't know. I'd have to read the story over.
Just say allegedly. That gets everybody out. Allegedly.
Exactly.
He allegedly borrowed a car. Allegedly
something happened in Binghamton, and he was arrested before one of the games, and they had to get him out of out of prison before the game. It was just a story that goes around in the minors, but getting to fight him, it's always fun to be on the winning side, that's for sure.
So tell me about the stadium series, playing at Yankee Stadium against the Rangers. Now, I talked about this with Bolt. I think he enjoyed the whole experience. I know for sure he was not happy about being a scratch in the game. What was that whole experience like playing on the outdoor rink at Yankee Stadium? Well, skating on it.
Yeah, practice was fun. it was a cool experience, obviously, being in the underbelly at Yankee Stadium and getting to see, where these guys are their setup, their medical room, their training room, their showers, all that, how beautiful it was done there. And, it was kind of a cool atmosphere, skating outdoors and we got to have our family and on the ice to do a little public skate. My kids were little at the time, so that was a real cool kind of atmosphere. When I found out I wasn't playing, which was kind of, that one really pissed me off because, it's a kind of once in a lifetime thing. And me and Bolts are warriors for the team. We're fighting, we're doing everything we can to help the team win. And this game, the ice is so bad. Anyone could play on it. You know what I mean? It didn't make much of a difference. We got scratched and we were both like, what is going on? Does Cappy not have any feel for this kind of stuff? I'm sure they're thinking like, let's give ourselves the best chance to win this and that. But Matt Donovan got a chance up to play that game as a D man. And, he is a good player, totally different than me. He brings something different than I do. He's more offensive and maybe we needed that at the time, but yeah, we weren't happy. Me and Bolts weren't happy, but by the time the puck dropped, we made ourselves real comfortable in the Yankees hot tub, and we were watching the game from in there after doing our workout and taking it all in, if you know what I mean. We're making the best of a bad situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Later that season, there was a game against Florida. You fought Eric Gudbranson. I think he went at, it's funny because he thought that you were fucking with Scotty Upshaw. It wasn't you, and he came in and challenged you. I think he would have been better off finding out who really did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Gudbranson's a big kid, but he's not a tough guy by any means. So it was kind of comical. We were talking in the box after, and he's like, "Oh, I'm lucky I got away with that one. Like I didn't really do much damage. I won the fight, but I didn't do any critical damage." So good for him.
Oh yeah, you always like guys standing up for their teammates, especially if it's not their primary job. So
absolutely.
So full marks to him. You finished the season with a couple of good scraps in Columbus versus Matt Calvert and Jared Bull. You remember those?
Yeah, Calvert was shocking. I was like, what the hell is going on here? He was running around a little bit and I came in and hit him and he dropped his gloves. I'm like, what is going on? How's this guy challenging me? And I fought him and obviously I put him down and later on, I think it was the second period, Jared came in. He's like, "Hey, let's take care of this." I'm like, "Okay, yeah, I understand." I'm like, "It was your buddy though. He was the idiot who dropped his gloves." He's like, "I know." So we fought and it was a good fight actually. He hung in there. I think I landed a couple early ones to put him on his heels, but he hung in there all the way till the end. And another guy I have a lot of respect with the way he played and he'd fight anyone and he did a great job at it.
And then in that off season you had back surgery, correct?
Yeah, that was, It wasn't the off season. It was okay. You're going into training camp, you know, and that season ended the way it did with, you know, a lot of call ups coming up because we were out of the playoff hunt. And I was just geared up to get ready for the next season. I had an amazing camp. Everyone was like, holy carks, you got faster and stronger and everything. And, you know, I was blowing the tests out of the water and really excited for the year because I thought I'd made kind of a name for myself in Long Island finally, because the first year with the lockout year, it didn't go, you know, it was kind of a, you know, a shortened season. We had some playoff success, which was great. Well, I wouldn't say success. We made the playoffs. We lost. We should have won that round. I thought as well. I thought we were all over Pittsburgh until they changed goalies. You know, from Marc-Andre, we seemed to have his number and they put Volkoon in. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't get it past Volkoon, but and that was also the Sidney Crosby diving incident, if you remember. All the signs in the stands of, you know, diving and all that kind of stuff. But anyways, so I was making a name for myself a little bit that second year, just by the way I played, and you know, nothing changed there. But I was faster, I was stronger, I felt great. I was like, wow, I'm like, if I have a great year here, maybe I can extend my career a little bit. But the body said no. My first preseason game, I laid a hit, you know, and I had felt great up to that point. And then, boom, I just felt something in my leg. It just went on fire. I had it before where I threw my back out, and give it 2 weeks and I'd be better. I'd feel fine and I'd play through it. But this one just seemed a lot different on the plane ride home. Numbness, tingling all down my legs. I knew something was off. So we did all the tests and I got a second opinion. I did all kinds of different treatments to try to avoid surgery, but ended up having to have surgery. And that, I knew that was kind of the kiss of death for me, a 35 year old guy getting back surgery, you know, with the style I play, it didn't mean good things were coming. That's for sure.
You ended up down in Bridgeport as a player, and I guess this is where the transition went from player to player coach. You played 19 games, and Bridgeport at this time, the way the game was going, you kind of went away from the one heavyweight or two heavyweights, and Bridgeport had a lot of guys. I mean, Galley was still down there, but they had a lot of guys who didn't mind scrapping. So if you don't mind, I'd like to play some name association with you again on some of these players. First player is a guy that's still with the Islanders right now, Scotty Mayfield.
Oh, yeah, Scotty. Yeah. No, you know, everyone knows Scotty. He just played the hard way. He wasn't afraid to mix it up a little bit here and there. That wasn't his, obviously, goal, but he brought that to the table as well. And I knew he was going to be a hell of a D-man, and it just took him a little bit to get over that hump of that confidence in the NHL. And once he did, man, he's part of that core group up top now.
I think this name is going to make you smile because whenever I bring him up, people just talk about what the person. Scooter Vaughn.
No, Scooter. A lot of energy in that kid. Yeah. I only knew him for the 1 year, but man, he was effective. He'd play all over. He was kind of a rover. He'd play 4D, you know, and he could scrap, man. He could scrap. But just a very likable guy, positive. A lot of energy. I remember his warm-ups were epic. He'd be dancing and, you know, and skipping and like, you know, he'd definitely put a smile on your face when you walk in the room, you see him.
A guy who's become a mainstay in the KHL. I don't know if he's coming back to play this year, but that's Andre Pedan.
Oh, Pedan, yeah. he liked to drive fast. That's what I remember about Andre. He had this Charger he bought, or maybe it was a Challenger, yeah. And guys who would take rides with him, you could see like their faces were white when they get out of the car with him. he took it like it was a NASCAR race to see how quick he could get to the arena. You know, but tough kid. I never got to fight him, but he always talked about fighting and techniques and all that kind of stuff. He was really passionate about it, that's for sure.
And then two guys that just had short stints there that season, Mark Lewis and Dyson Stevenson.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. That's, now you're really going. That's testing my memory.
Yeah,
okay?
I know.
but, again, Stevenson, yeah, they're – again, same thing. I don't have much bad things to say about anyone. And
yeah, I'm glad.
These kids are just stand up guys. And I do have about certain guys, but you're not mentioning them, so I'm not going to go there.
Well, I mean, listen, I you're more than welcome to freestyle here, because normally I just ask about the guys who play a tougher style, and for most of the tougher guys, you get along with the other tougher guys, but feel free. I mean, if you want to freestyle, go right ahead.
I'm not going to unload my trash on this. That's for sure. No, maybe, I'm good. But
maybe one day we'll grab lunch or something, and you could do that off mic.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I remember that year going down and like in the minors, and they I think I got sent down when they were on a terrible losing streak, and they were doing two-a-days at the rink, and everyone was kind of miserable. I remember Aaron Ness. He was there at the time, and I think he rolled his ankle because, you know, the fatigue set in. They're doing two-a-days and working out, and it was and Snowy called me. He's like, Karks, you don't have to do that, because I was coming off like a back surgery trying to recover, and I don't think my body could handle that at that point. So it was a little interesting, and it was a big step down from the NHL. So it's kind of a tough reality that I was put into at that point. But again, there's a lot of good guys to help me out. Like I hung out with Galley a lot, and he is a great guy. He's a good hockey guy, and man, he was tough as nails.
I have Galley on my personal minor league enforcer Mount Rushmore. Out of all the hockey I've ever watched, he is right up there. He's one of my top four guys that have it. So yeah, He's arguably the toughest guy still playing right now, even though he's in the American League. You know, you can make a case he's tougher than anyone in the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. It would be interesting to see, you know?
Yeah. You were obviously, the goal is to be in the NHL, but since you're down in the American League and since you're a veteran player, and obviously the AHL is a developmental league, did you find yourself in sort of a mentor role at this point? Because, you know, sometimes the players, if they don't want to go to a coach and ask them things, they can go to you. You know, you're still playing at that point, especially the defensemen. Did you find yourself being a mentor to some of the younger players?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was kind of my number one role down there, really. It's, you know, I was trying to get back to the NHL. That was kind of my goal, but I knew I had to help these young guys along. You know, I had Ryan Pulock, you had Reinhardt, Griffin Reinhardt, you had Mayfield, you had Pelly, Aaron Ness. Like you had some good players down there. And for me, it was, I just wanted to share my knowledge with them as best I could. And you know, I was playing the games as well with them. So I was right there with them. And no better way to help them along but to show them on ice, right? So I actually remember getting back to my form and feeling pretty good, you know? Like I was back to being able – I knew I would have been able to play in the NHL if I was given my chance, but I just thought that, you know, I'm not going to get another chance because my back was bad. But it was great to be able to work with these young D-men and really, you know – get to evaluate them, and we had talks, you know, me and Snowy had talks about who I thought was probably more NHL ready. Was it Griffin Reinhardt or Ryan Pulock at the time? And me, I'm glad I got the right answer. I said Pulock, you know, so I'm glad that I assessed it properly, you know, nothing against Griff, but he just didn't have it. He didn't have the drive, and Pooley was a little bit more ready for that. And again, we had, like the D that I got to skate with and work with is, you know, they're all up in the NHL right now. And it's pretty cool to see. I'm pretty happy I got to be a small little part I wouldn't say their development at that point, but I got to play with them and be a little bit of an influence in their career that way.
Well, I'll speak for all Islander fans. For whatever part you played in their growth, thank you very much. So, you know,
I'll give it more to Boganicki and Brent Thompson. That's for sure. Those guys did a great job with them.
Well, all you guys, thank you very much. Cause you know, especially, you know, I love Scotty a lot and Pulock and Pelic. I mean, those are cornerstone guys. Now they could be here for a decade if they want to be. So those guys are a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Another guy, well, one guy you fought, he had a cup of coffee with Bridgeport. You fought him twice. I believe he's with Springfield at the time, and that's Matthew Gagnon. You remember your pair of fights with him?
Oh my gosh, I know the name. Yeah. No, I do remember. They were kind of like scrums in front of the net.
Yeah,
he to me he wasn't much of of a fight. I'd have to look back at him, but I think at that point, you know, there wasn't that many guys that I really had to face that were real intimidating at that point.
One guy who you did face that had a very good reputation. I don't know if you remember fighting him with Manchester, and that's Josh Gratton.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I remember seeing him like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I haven't seen this guy in forever. And that was the night, I think that was where Galley was doing, you know, he was mic'd up and stuff for, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank with that Netflix series. Anyways, he was fighting Bissonnette that night. And then Gratz, he ended up running one of the young D-men, and I grabbed him, and we ended up having a pretty good fight. And I hit that guy hard again, and he could take a punch. He could still take a punch. And, you know, it ended up being a pretty good fight. And I didn't do it too much that year. I was still kind of skeptical with the old back surgery, but, you know, ended up stepping up to the plate there and did a pretty decent job.
So, tell me about Hero the Hero, the book that was written by Mrs. Karkner and Mrs. Helmer, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, that kind of came out of nowhere. And, you know, Pam Helmer and Carrie, they're, you know, sisters, and they talk all the time, both in the hockey kind of community, and decided they wanted to do something. They wanted to write a children's book and make it pretty unique and kind of a Christmas book. And geez, they worked on it for quite a while and finally got it released, and it did very well for them. I'm pretty proud of what they accomplished there, and started to make a little bit of a name for themselves. They were about to release a second book, and then the illustrator, I don't know, he had some mental health issues, and he just, you know, stopped answering calls. He had pretty much the whole second book done, didn't finish a few things, but, you know, legally they couldn't use those illustrations anymore. And unfortunately it kind of came to a close there. It's the hero, the first book is still available, but they have not been able to complete the second one, which I'm still on my wife and my sister-in-law about. I think they should finish it and keep that going, because it's a pretty, pretty cool thing. And it was great for the kids and the kids' friends to all kind of be a part of as well.
And did they do a book tour, maybe around the American League, or maybe just in local bookstores? Did they get to go out and promote the book?
They did a little bit. Yeah. They, you know, hockey tournaments, and they went up, they went up to the Canada Cup in Toronto and had, like, you know, had a big display up for that. They marketed it fairly well. They didn't go 100% on it, but had enough success where they were happy with.
And you can still purchase the book on Amazon, I'd imagine.
I believe so. I think it's still there.
All right. So anyone with kids who want to read, especially in the world we're in today with so much negativity, why don't you go and check out Hero the Hero book on Amazon and pick it up and give your kids some positive messages.
That's right. Christmas is coming.
That's right. Right here before you know it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
As we enter what would end up being your last season as a player, I would imagine – after the career you had up to this point, how are you feeling physically going into it? Did you know that this would probably be your last year, or were you going to try to keep going as long as you could?
I wanted, at that point, my focus was to play as long as I could. I wanted to finished my, my last year of my contract as a player, and, you know, just kind of see how far I could take this and see where my body was at the end of the year. So my focus was to play and to do the best I could. I knew, you know, every day was, I had to do a warm-up before my warm-up just to get my body going in the morning, because my back and, you know, hips and everything was all messed up just trying to play. And the day-to-day rigors of playing pro hockey, it wasn't easy. So that was my focus and that was my goal.
So this, I think, would be an interesting question for people to know. So as a player, you have your routine. On game day, you go to the rink, you have your morning skate, you eat something, you take your nap, you come back to the rink. As a coach, you're at the morning skate, then you game plan. When you're a player coach, how does your day differ? Your game day routine, how does that differ when you have you're a player and a coach? How does that differ from when you're one or the other?
Well, it would really only differ if I wasn't playing. If I was playing that day, I'd approach the day as a player and just focus on getting ready for the game and game preparation. Player coach, Tomer and Bogey, they eased me into it. And, what I was given the first year was being the eye in the stands, or eye in the sky, and watching the game from up top and writing notes on players and people that I, thought were good on the other side. An intro to all the software, the computer, the video systems that we use. So a lot of my time when I wasn't playing was just playing around with the video and seeing how to put a meeting together, that kind of thing. So as a player, you're practice. If it's a game day, you're doing your morning skate around 10, skate for about, half hour or so, and get your body ready, stretch, and any treatment you need. And then you go home for lunch and have your pregame nap. A couple, and that's kind of your routine. You just don't get that kind of downtime as much. You may get a little time for lunch after the game prep and all that. And for me, it was a little bit of an adjustment, but I was eager to learn and kind of see what goes on behind the scenes.
So for Islander fans now that still appreciate the physical style game, you were able to really witness the growth of one Ross Johnston, who, as you may imagine, is one of my favorite players. Talk about Ross's development and now seeing him as a full-time NHLer.
Yeah, no, Ross, big, big man and, a good hockey mind. He actually, he understands the game and he wanted to give the team a chance to win every night. And he was pretty vocal on the bench and did a good job in trying to lead the right way. Obviously he knew his role. He knew his assets. It was his size and his toughness and his grit in his game. The biggest thing he worked on was, day-to-day skills. He was working on his skating. He was working to get better. He knew he needed a step to get to that next level. And also with the fighting, that was kind of that he had to learn that a little bit as he went and overcome some fear. He got an injury early in his career where he broke his jaw and that set him back a little bit. And he had to kind of get over that and face the fear of fighting again and getting back into it. And he did a great job with that. There was a lot of support. Eric Cairns, player development, obviously, had some good conversations with him. I was there. We had Eric Bolton around, he had a lot of good influence around him to help him with that part of the game. But he developed nicely and obviously was rewarded with a real nice contract for him. And it's definitely good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, I think it's, players like yourself who play the physical game, it's always, you're the guys that have to pay attention to the details, which is why I think the natural progression for someone like yourself to get right into coaching, I think it makes complete sense because you had to work for everything you got. You had to pay attention to the small things, just like a player like Eric Bolton, just like a player like Eric Cairns. And I think for someone like Ross, having you guys around, whether it's at the rink or you're a phone call away, it proves invaluable. And you see it around the league. If you go through the team websites and you see who's on the staff, whether it's like Cairns, director of development or coaches or anywhere in the hockey ops department, you see it more and more where you have guys who played physical. And like I said, I think it's because you guys were the ones that had to pay attention to the details. And I think having you three around really was invaluable for Ross. And one thing that Cairns always tells me is every year you saw him improve, you saw his skating improve, you saw his hands improve. And I know for a fact that the brass here really likes him. And I just can't wait till he gets a chance to maybe he'll never be a full-timer with the way the game is going, but I always know when I watch the games and I see that he's not a scratch, it kind of pumps me up a bit.
Yeah, yeah. No, he definitely brings a presence, and that is something, you know, you're seeing less of. But, yeah, again, like you said, you know, he had a lot of support in every kind of means. You know, we did a good job with development, you know, in Bridgeport and Brent Thompson and Eric Boganicki too. He likes to study that side of the game as well. Although, you know, he's not that style of player. He actually scored goals. So, you know, Ross had a lot of support, and the good thing is that, you know, good people who work hard and are goal oriented and want to take the information, they usually do well. And that was him to a T.
Excellent. You led the team in penalty minutes this year, and I think a big chunk of that was a late-season game, April 10th, against Lehigh Valley, where you set the Bridgeport record for penalty minutes in a single game. It started with a fight with Dalton Smith, and later on, all hell broke loose, and you found yourself with Danik Martell. Can you kind of take me through that game?
Yeah, that was kind of a culmination of events, you know, like at this point, I knew my back wasn't good. It was, you know, I was struggling with it. I was losing feeling in my leg during games and, you know, like falling over. It just wasn't good. I knew my days were limited. So for me, I'm going into that game and we're hunting for playoffs, for anything like that. You know, we're trying to win games and keep some hopes alive. But anyways, I just approached it as any other game, but I think I was a little more aggravated, I guess, about my own personal situation. So, Lehigh, they had some pests on the team, you know, and I just didn't like the way that the kids were now, you know, at this point in my career. I've been through it, and I've seen true tough guys. I've seen middleweight guys who would back it up. And, you know, this new kind of era of kids who just mouth off and never have to pay a consequence. It was just really irritating to me. So,
I hear you.
Yeah. So I just, you know, kind of took matters into my own hands. Danik Martell, you know, I forget what happened. I took a penalty on him. I cross-checked him or something. And then he's staring at me like, what are you going to do? I'm like, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to grab you and beat the bag out of you. And that's exactly what I did. And there was a scrum. I got instigator. I got thrown out of the game. I don't know why I got so many penalty minutes, probably because I didn't stop. The lines came in and I kept going and all that. So they just wanted to get rid of me. And anyways, I don't even know how many penalty minutes. It wasn't my record. It was like 38 or something like that, penalty minutes.
Well, it's the Bridgeport team record, not your personal record.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was, the guys were like, how the hell did you get that many penalty minutes in one game? I'm like, that's not even my record. So don't worry about it. So a little bit of that, you know what I mean? But the situation arose and that's, I felt that was the appropriate action.
Oh, I mean, you struck a chord for all the old school people out there for sure. So, so as much of a presence as you had on the ice throughout your entire career, you have the exact opposite presence on social media. But in the irony of all ironies, you actually announced your retirement on Facebook July 6, 2016. So, like you said, you already talked about that final season where you knew things weren't going well and the injuries were catching up to you. What led to that decision? I would imagine it was a family decision. And how'd you come to that final conclusion?
Yeah, no, I just knew my body was done at that point. And yeah, going on, I think that was one of my, I don't even know how much I post on that, but you know, my wife and I, we talk, we're like, let's just get it out there so everyone knows. That was the end. I just knew my body couldn't handle any more punishment. And I wanted to get into the other side of it and start a coaching career and move on, I guess, from the game, but staying in the game at the same time.
So there you have it, folks. That is volume one of Damage Incorporated. These will be the type of solo episodes I'll have going forward, I think. maybe some more of the seasons in review, but I found this episode, doing this episode, to be kind of interesting, and I was fortunate enough to have interviewed both of these fine gentlemen, so it made things a lot easier. You know, going forward, I may not have had that opportunity, but I'd still like to bring some of these episodes to you where we focus on a tag team, a dynamic duo, however you want to phrase it, but where we focus on two guys and talk about their time with the Islanders. And if I'm lucky, I'll have some audio from the guys themselves. So I hope you enjoyed this, and you people have a great week.